set the thing that counts. Come on, Brother McBride. Good to have you, brother.
Well, it's wonderful to be here tonight. Joshua chapter 1 and verse 1, please, if you'll turn over there. And I want to thank you for being in the service. And I want to thank the preacher for having us, allowing us to be part of the service tonight. And then thank you for putting us up in the house over in the village. We've been really enjoying that. And we're thankful for whoever prayed for warm weather. I went to Iowa and preached in January. I had a momentary leave of senses. But anyway, I went to Iowa and preached. And on the last day when we flew out, with the wind chill, it was 37 below. And so I was so glad when I got to Florida, and it was warm. Now, it may not seem warm to you, but it seems warm to me. And we've enjoyed ourselves, and we're so comfortable over there in the house. And we want to thank you for your kindness toward us and your generosity, and then for the privilege and the honor to be able to preach for a little while tonight. We have some dear friends with us tonight, Dale and Rachel Vance. They just got back from a trip to the Holy Land. Now, I'm not talking about Kentucky for some of you. I'm talking about over in Israel. And you need to get introduced to Mrs. Vance. She is very important, and she is very valuable, because somebody over there in the Holy Land offered Dale 500 camels for her while they were over there. And so she's quite valuable, so you want him. Of course, he didn't take him up on the deal because he said he was holding out for 600. But you'll want to meet her. She's valuable. Amen. We appreciate them, and thank you so much for allowing us to be here. Joshua 1 and verse 1. I want to read this one verse and take a little phrase out of it this evening for a few moments. The Bible said, "Now, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister." Now, there are several things we could look at in this passage, several truths that we would find in this one verse sort of packed together here. We know that the word "now" associates this verse with the previous verse in the book of Deuteronomy that has come before it. And so it is a continuing message. And God is changing. He's moving in another direction. He is taking them to the promised land as he said he would. But one leader's passing off the scene, another leader coming on the scene. And there are several things about Joshua we could learn and some things about Moses. But when I read this verse, now I will say this. Years ago when I started preaching, the Lord called me to preach, and I went immediately into evangelism and began pastoring in, or preaching revivals. In fact, I surrendered in January and started preaching revivals in April. My pastor said they were weak revivals, and I meant 7 days, and he meant not very strong in the preaching. But the Lord put this verse on my heart that God used the servant of the servant, Moses' minister. And the Lord said to me, "If you will be a servant to the man of God, I will use you." And I have tried. I've not always been the servant I should be, but I've tried these past 30 years. But I was reading this verse the other day, and I noticed this little phrase, "Now, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord." The servant of the Lord. And what I'd like us to do for just a few moments tonight is I want us to attend a funeral, the funeral of Moses. We find some particulars about it here in our Bible. Now, we're going to look in the last chapter of Deuteronomy, but before we can do that, we have to go back to the book of Numbers in chapter 20 for a moment or two, because we have to find out what it was that occasioned the death of Moses. Why is it that Moses, the leader of God's people, is going to die before he gets into the promised land? Why is that? Well, we find that he had a failure in his life in Numbers chapter 20. In Numbers chapter 20 and verse 7, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes. And it shall give forth his water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so thou shalt give the congregation and their beasts to drink. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock. And he said unto them, "Hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock?" And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice. And the water came out abundantly. And the congregation drank, and their beasts also. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, "Because ye believed me not to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation in the land which I have given them. This is the water of Meribah, because of the children of Israel strove with the Lord, and he was sanctified in them." Here is a failure in the life of Moses, the man of God. And we ought to, tonight, when we look at this, we ought to be arrested by this failure. It ought to affect us. When we think about a man of God who fails, when a child of God fails, what it does in the lives of other people. I thought about how serious this failure is. It was a privileged failure. Moses had seen God do many wonderful things. God had spoken to him in a way that he'd never spoken to anyone else, and yet Moses failed. And because of his privilege, there was a great chastisement that came upon him. God said to Israel and Amos, "You only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore, I will punish you for all your iniquities." Along with privilege comes responsibility. And then it was a public failure. It wasn't a failure that happened with Moses off in the corner somewhere, but it was before all the people he failed. It was a public failure. And then it was a prideful failure. Do you notice what Moses said? And this is where most of our failures come from. Moses did not say, "Must God fetch you water out of the rock?" Moses said, "Hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch you water out of the rock?" Moses wasn't fetching any water. God was fetching the water. But somehow along the line, Moses got wrapped up in himself. And the psalmist tells us about it. He tells us in Psalm 106 and 32 and 33, he said, "They angered him also at the waters of strife, so that it went ill with Moses for their sakes, because they provoked his spirit that he spoke unadvisedly with his lips." You better keep yourself under control. Better submit yourself and surrender to the Holy Ghost of God, because our flesh is just like Moses' flesh, and it wants to exalt itself, and it always leads to trouble when the flesh exalts itself. And then it was a prophetic failure. The smiting of the rock broke the type of Christ dying once for all of our sin. He had already smitten the rock once. Water had come out. Paul tells us in the New Testament that rock that followed them was Christ. And so his smiting the rock the first time was a picture of the crucifixion of the Lord and the water of life coming forward. When he smites it the second time, he breaks the type of the eternal security of the believer and one sacrifice for sin forever. If you don't ever get it settled that Jesus died once for sin and you only have to get saved once, if you don't ever get that settled, you won't ever make it into the land of promise, that land of victory in your Christian life. So it broke the prophetic failure. It was a prophetic failure, and then it was a profane failure. I was looking at this one day and I had missed something. I was reading what a man by the name of Butler said about it, and I had missed this in the reading. The rod that he has is the rod of Aaron that budded. Now think about why that rod budded. You remember in Israel, they were in rebellion. They said, "All of us can stand for God. You don't." They were attacking the priesthood, and God said, "I'll tell you whom a priest is. Y'all put your rods down, and the one that buds, that'll be the one I've chosen." And Aaron's rod budded. So this rod is the symbol of the sanctity and holiness of the priesthood. Moses has it in his hand, and he is going to take that which is the very symbol of the sanctity of his office and smash it upon a rock. Look like you ought to look at that thing and say, "Now I ought to be careful the way I act because of the position that I'm in." But sometimes we do that. Sometimes we forget where God has brought us and what God has done for us, and the flesh endangers our holy calling. So it is a profane failure. It is not a light thing. It's not a little thing. It is a serious thing that Moses has done here. And it's always a serious thing to fail. We ought not only be arrested by the seriousness of this failure, But we ought to be affected by the sadness in this failure. I thought of three things that go on here. First of all, God said to Moses and Aaron, because ye believed me not. We have an unbelieving leader. Moses should have believed God. You and I ought to believe God after all the things that God has done for us. Saved us and blessed us and helped us. Every time, the Lord's just so good. The other day, my car quit. I flew in from Iowa, and the car, I got 5 miles from the church, headed to preach in South Carolina, and the car quit, the van. And so I called the tow thing, and they came, the tow truck, and they towed me into a repair shop, and I was going to leave the van. And I got out of the shop, I looked up at the sign. You know what it said? In everything, give thanks. That was good of the Lord, put that on the sign when I was broke down, reminding me that it was the will of God, reminding me that He was still in control. God's been awfully good to us, hadn't He? We ought to just believe Him. We ought to just take Him at His word. We ought to just say, all right, Lord, if you say so, that's good enough for me. I looked up that word believe in my concordance, and it says to support or to foster as a parent or nurse. And I thought Moses should have believed God, and that would have supported the children of Israel and helped them believe. But he didn't believe. And I'm sure it had an effect on the congregation. It's also sad because there is an unsanctified Lord. He said, you didn't sanctify me. Now that word sanctified means be holy. And what God is saying is, you didn't make me look holy. You brought a blemish upon my holiness in front of the people. Do you remember when David sinned? You remember what the Bible said? The Bible said, David said, I've sinned. And Nathan said, God hath put thy sin away. But he said, howbeit, by this thou hast given great occasion the enemies of God to blaspheme. We ought to be careful about his holiness and his testimony. And then there was an unfinished labor. Moses didn't get to finish. That's a sad thing. After 40 years of ministry, he didn't finish well. I'd like to finish well, wouldn't you? One of my preacher friends put it, said, I'd like to go out standing up. I'd like to finish well. How sad it was for Moses to spend all those years, 40 years of ministry, marred by a moment in the flesh. 40 years of ministry marred in the last moment, close to the promised land. It's a sad failure. But wait a minute now. There's a third thing I want you to notice, and this is what I'm interested in. We ought to be amazed at the silence concerning this failure. When we read in Joshua chapter 1, did you hear what God said? Now, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord. He didn't say, now, after the death of Moses, the failure. After the death of Moses, the one that messed up. No, he said, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord. Now, I want you to go with me to Deuteronomy, and we'll take just a moment. And I want us to go to Moses' funeral for a moment. And I want us to wonder at the mercy of God and the faithfulness of God and the love of God and the care of God and the grace of God. Where would we be if God was not a merciful God? Where would we be if God was not a God of grace? Where would you and I be tonight if God was not a God of love? Where would we be tonight if we didn't have a merciful God? God says to Moses, get up the mountain, it's time to die. And Moses heads up the mountain in the 34th chapter of Deuteronomy, and he goes up onto the mountain. In verse 1, Moses went up from the plains of Moab onto the mountain of Nebo to the top of Pisgah that is over against Jordan. Now, you know what happens up there? Moses can see the promised land. He can see all the land. He's not going to get to go into it, but God is going to give him a view from the mountaintop of all of that land that God has promised. And in
verse 4, and the Lord said unto him, this is the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go thither. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab according to the word of the Lord. And he buried him in a valley in the land of Moab over against Beth Peor, but no man knoweth of his sepulcher unto this day. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. And the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. So the days of weeping and mourning for Moses were ended. Now it cost Moses something to sin. There was a consequence to his failure. But the one thing it did not do was change how God loved him. The one thing it did not do was cancel out the mercy of God. The one thing it did not do was mean that Moses had never been a servant. Did you ever notice when you sin or do wrong, people remember it? Boy, if you ever fail, it's going to come up somewhere. They're going to remember every little jot and every little tittle, every misspoken word, every mispronounced word, every misstep. Somebody could have been years ago and somebody be talking to your name and come up and say, you know, they messed up one time. That's the way we are. That's the way men are. But when God mentions Moses, he said, the servant of the Lord. In the next verse, he said, Moses, my servant. God was not thinking of Moses' failure. God was thinking of all of Moses' successes. He wasn't thinking about the time when the flesh got the better of him. God was thinking about all the times when Moses was what he was supposed to be. And so God called him my servant. This is an unusual funeral. It's different because there are no pallbearers. There's no mourners that come up along with him in the funeral. God is the one that officiates. And it's interesting what the Bible said about it. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab according to the word of the Lord. I was reading what the Jewish rabbis say about this. And they say that what the Bible is saying to us is that God kissed Moses to death upon that mountain. Died at the mouth or the word of the Lord. I thought that was interesting. Mays Jackson was preaching one time. You remember Brother Mays in the old truck driver special? And somebody asked him, he's preaching on the death of Moses. And that little verse there that says, his eye was not dim nor his natural force abated. They said, Brother Mays, how does a man whose eye is not dim nor his natural force abated, how does a man like that die? And Brother Jackson said, I tell you how he dies. God just wrapped him up in his arm and smothered him with kisses and took him home. And then he was so precious to God that God picked up the body and buried it in himself and covered it up and let no man know where he was. It's as though God said, this is my precious servant. He is precious to me. You see, failures don't sour God. They don't make God bitter like they make men bitter. It's not that God didn't know that Moses had sinned. It was that God's love for Moses, like his love for you and I, would have him remember all the good that Moses had accomplished for the cause of Christ. So God took Moses up there and he let him see. I've thought about some of the saints of God. And I know the River Jordan is not a picture of physical death necessarily, but of death to self and going into the promised land. I understand that. But I thought about some that have come near to death and God's just pulled back the curtains a little bit and let them see over in the glory world. I've heard them say, you know, I see Johnny or I see Mama or I see Daddy. I remember Brother Tony Hudson telling us one time about being in the room with his daddy when his daddy went home and his daddy had been quiet and he'd been silent and all of a sudden he sat up in the bed and looked at Tony and said, tell him it's real, son. Tell him it's real. Tell him it's real. I'm going to tell you it's real tonight. There's a glory world. God's going to take us home one day. And I was thinking about this. Moses did not get to enter into the promised land that day. But 1,500 years later, Jesus has Peter and James and John. And they go up a mountain, and the Lord is transfigured before them, and there stands Moses and Elijah in the promised land.
When you were little, maybe sometime you didn't do what you're supposed to do, and you had to be disciplined. And when your father or your mother was done disciplining with you, and you were weeping, they'd carry off to the bed and lay you down, kiss away your tears and say, "Now I love you, and it'll be all right in the morning." I wonder if the Lord kissed away the tears of Moses and said, "Now it's going to be all right in the morning. Because I love you. And we'll stand together one day on that mountain." I'm just trying to say to you tonight that if you fail, don't take the failure lightly. But don't take the mercy of God lightly either. Because when God looked at Moses, he said, "Moses, my servant." I'm glad our failures don't sour him and make him bitter and say, "That's it, I'm done."